Welcome to The Beat, a podcast series from the cops office at the Department of Justice, featuring interviews with experts from a varied field of disciplines. The Beat provides law enforcement with the latest developments and trending topics in community policing. Hello, and welcome to The Beat. I'm your host, Jennifer Donnellan. As most of our listeners are aware, the United States Department of Justice Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services focuses on the nationwide advancement of community policing. Community policing cannot occur without a dedicated staff of law enforcement officers. Recruiting and retaining those high-quality officers, though, has been a struggle for departments across the United States over the past few years. The Rapid City Police Department in South Dakota was one of those agencies, and focus on the word was. Things turned around in 2023 for them through a holistic approach that does not focus on just a single issue, but instead addresses a wide variety of factors. Today, our guests are Assistant Chief Scott Sitz and Research and Development Specialist Dave Kinzer from the Rapid City Police Department. Assistant Chief Sitz and Mr. Kinzer, welcome to The Beat.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
So I don't want to break with tradition, and I want to get to the subject that we're going to be talking about. And I always tell folks, I'm so excited that we're talking about this, but I truly do mean it. We're bringing news you can use to law enforcement leadership and officers across the United States. And this is a topic that I know so many are focused on right now. But before we dive into that, I always like to ask the same question, which is, how did you get into law enforcement? So if you could just briefly each tell me, Dave, actually, I'll start with you. You're a civilian in a police department. How did you get involved in law enforcement?
So I joined the Marines out of high school, and then I was working overseas for federal law enforcement with the State Department. And I got stuck in Iraq for like 4 years and was trying to move home. And the Rapid City Police Department kind of saved me from that situation and brought me in, and it's been great ever since.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear how your military experience parlayed into your experience at the police department. Thank you. Assistant Chief Sitz, how did you get involved? What was the draw to law enforcement for you in the first place?
I grew up in a first responder family, and so I've been around law enforcement my entire life. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do or could think about doing. I got out of high school. Again, I also joined the Marine Corps. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I started going to college. And when I was going to college, I got hired on by a local sheriff's office. So I've been doing this now for a little bit over 25 years.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for your service to our country. All right, let's dive in. Let's tell everyone about the Rapid City Police Department. I want to talk about the past, and then we're going to move into the present and how you arrived at your situation now. So tell us about the Rapid City Police Department and some of the issues that your agency has faced over the last few years, specifically when it comes to recruitment and retention. What kind of shortages were you dealing with?
Yeah, so I would say, 2012 up through 2019, we were pretty typical. Our average attrition rate was around that 6-7%. After 2019, like a lot of law enforcement agencies, we started seeing those that were eligible for retirement, they were definitely out the door. Those that could take an early retirement, they were out the door. And then we just really had a large turnover with our senior officers, even sergeants that we haven't seen before, seeking different professions, different careers, completely outside of law enforcement. And our attrition rate kind of soared the last couple of years, where we were averaging right around 14%, which I think is pretty consistent throughout law enforcement right now in the nation, that 14-20%. And we were really struggling to keep staff, to bring in good people. We noticed that our application pool really dropped off. Before, we were getting each hiring cycle, 100 to 150 applicants. We were down to averaging about 20, 25 applicants, and really struggling to fill our manpower needs.
Let me ask you, in terms of why they were leaving, can you pinpoint that? Was that because of just the general sentiment towards law enforcement? Was there experiences that they were having in the field in Rapid City? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you bet. I think it's all of the above. I think the social climate towards law enforcement definitely played a huge role. I think over the past, if we look back at statistics, our communities have become more violent. Assaults on officers have increased. And also our workload has increased dramatically, where burnout has become a major, major factor. Our officers here at the Rapid City Police Department are very busy. They're averaging per officer on patrol right around that 1,500 calls for service a year. So it's nonstop for our department. So I think there are several key factors that played into that high turnover rate.
Yeah, and just to add to what Scott said, I mean, we've kind of took a very outward looking in approach to kind of officer burnout and fatigue, and kind of ran some numbers and had some surveys and found that you know, like 65% of our calls were going towards the homeless problem, right? And on all our surveys, they, you know, cops said, hey, we want to be cops. And we're kind of chasing these continued cycles that are never closing and there's never resolution. We're dealing with the same people day in and day out.
So you ran those surveys with the force that you had sort of left after the, you know, I don't want to call it the Great Escape, but after those officers who were eligible and could retire, retired. So those were surveys with your force at the time.
Yeah, both with the force at the time, right, doing a department-wide survey, but then also doing exit interviews with every single officer that was leaving and having, you know, unabashed and unfiltered conversations where you say, hey, what happened, right? And you got to open yourself up to criticism if you're willing to have that.
Right, exactly. Let's set the stage a little bit about policing in Rapid City, South Dakota, to begin with. How busy is the department? Where do you sort of stand statewide?
We lead the state in overall, well, I'm not going to say lead the state. We're tied kind of with Sioux Falls, which has triple the population of us here in Rapid City for calls for service. 2022, 2021, we led the state in homicides, and our officers run. When we bring in new hires, we want to be upfront with them. And this is not a department where you're going to be looking for calls for service or looking for something to do. It's literally call to call with calls holding and calls stacked.
So describe for me then, what's the sort of makeup in Rapid City? Is it primarily suburban? Do you have urban centers? What is driving that extremely busy calls for service?
I think what we have here is Rapid City is kind of the hub of the west side of South Dakota. We have a lot of communities around this, but anyone that comes here in this area is going to come to Rapid City for entertainment. They come to Rapid City for shopping. I think another key factor is we have the poorest Native American reservation about 45 miles away from us. So we have a lot of visitors from the reservation up here too. So while our population is right around that 80,000 mark, on any given day, you can probably add 30 to 40,000 just from the surrounding communities.
Thank you. That paints the picture. Chief, we've talked about rank and file. What was the sentiment among the command staff? What were those conversations like in 2021, 2022, as you sort of saw the department struggling with the recruitment and retention?
Yeah, those conversations, you know, to go back to our attrition rate a little bit, and I failed to mention this, but law enforcement is a difficult job, and it takes a special individual to be committed and to go to work day in and day out. And we all know the struggles with seeing things that no person should ever have to see. And really that toll that it takes on your own wellness, it takes on your family. So we wanted to look at this as a package. If everything that kind of impacts our retention, that our health, wellness, and safety of our officers and our staff, and how do we really address this together?
It was a team approach.
Absolutely. You know, not only a team approach, but I would say also a city approach when we're talking about the stuff we were able to implement. We have a very supportive city council. We have a very supportive mayor, and we have a very supportive community overall here of law enforcement. So really, this was a team conversation within our rank and file, within our command staff, and then also with our other city leadership.
You can do all you want to do. Your command staff can do all you want to do. But if you don't have that buy-in from city leadership, from the community, that becomes a difficult, if not impossible, thing to do. So thank you for bringing that up. I want to get into how you got there, but I want to first start off with, for our listeners, things turned around in 2023. So where does the department stand now in terms of staffing? Where is morale? And then we'll get to how you got there. But where are we right now?
So right now, today, we entered the year looking for 35 sworn police officers, and right now we're currently only have 8 openings, and that is including the 8 employees we've lost this year. So if we didn't lose any this year, we would have been full staff.
Compared to, just to paint the picture in terms of like, you're at full staff now, what was sort of your worst situation there in terms of staffing?
At one point, I think we were at what, 34 down at the highest, 34, 35.
So you were 34, 35 officers down, say around what?
Beginning of this year.
Oh, beginning of this year you were
beginning
down.
Beginning of this year.
And now you're only down 8.
8. And our attrition rate, when I compared January through October of 2022 to January of October of 2023, our attrition rate has dropped by 55.56%.
Yeah, I can hear jaws dropping. How did we get there? Let's talk about that. We're going to spend some time talking about that. So you used some traditional methods, such as increasing pay and better access to time off, but you went further than that. So just A to Z, what was the recipe?
Yeah, the recipe was surveys. The recipe was research. I spent the summer of 2022 at the FBI National Academy. And I was able to talk to a lot of different agencies, really invested a lot of my time there in taking their wellness courses and just learning about the different wellness options, what's available, what some other departments are doing, and visiting with those agencies and kind of bringing back what other departments are doing and then dig it into what our employees want. Because what I think is great, what I want may not be what our employees want. So really determining what those employees want, what's important to them, and then seeing what we can bring to the table and what we can implement.
All right. And Dave, what did you bring to the table?
Well, so like I said, we were really crunching numbers, looking at the tangible and intangibles, right? Especially when you're talking from an HR perspective, law enforcement being one of the toughest jobs in the world, because you're balancing what customer service, public safety, and that morale and welfare issues, right? So, I mean, we took a real intentional look through the surveys, crunched the numbers on there, found out, like, you know, because oftentimes rumors start in the basement, right? And that's where the sentiment comes from, is the people on the ground, right? So diagnosing what they were having issues with and saying, wow, 60% of our calls are related to this chronic homelessness issue in Rapid City, right? And crisis and co-occurring substance abuse. So he said, well, what are we doing there? How can we look to fix that? And honestly, we've been working with IACP, International Association of Chiefs of Police and Cops, intentionally for years to develop kind of proactive outreach units with our quality of life unit, who is embedded in our care campus, which is our diversionary, and then kind of working on some of our high utilizers. We looked at our top 10 high utilizers. Our number one had, I believe it was 355 contacts with fire and EMS in 1 year, and we ran the numbers, and that was $120,000 to Rapid City and the county. And so we kind of put it up as a business proposal, like, how can we do better? But you talk about the political capital, right? Somebody that is costing that much, that's two full-time officer salaries. So we looked at kind of that, working with our partners in our quality of life unit and helping to get these high utilizers out of jail into treatment. And a lot of them were gainfully employed. And that was one of our first approaches, is kind of cracking down on some of our biggest issues there.
Your highest utilizer had 355 contacts in 1 year. That's almost once a day.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look even further, right, I mean, we calculated, you know, the total number of jail time that guy had had in the last 10 years, either served or in lieu of, you know, and then on probation, and, you know, exceeded the actual time limit that he was alive during those 10 years. Right. So, I mean, he had like 15 years of stacked up jail time or something egregious. You know, the officers see that, they know that, right?
And that doesn't help him. It's obviously not helping him. It's not working. It's not working for the officers. It's not working for the community. So for perspective, how much time did you have to invest, right? Time, energy, did you have to invest to get to that, breaking down the numbers? How did you break down those numbers? Because I'm sure there are some who are listening saying, you know what, we need to do the same. So how'd you do that?
I mean, working with a record staff and then also the court system, right, and other partners. So we've kind of got a unique partnership here in Rapid City that is easy, that we probably take for granted that a lot of people don't, is we share a joint building with our sheriff's office, have integrated records, command staffs, patrols in the basement. Their patrol is on the first floor. And the county runs diversion programs, care campus, crisis resources, 24/7 safe bed solutions. So we embedded our quality of life unit, two officers and two civilians, social workers at that care campus, where that they were meeting with our quality of life high utilizers, we call them. And those individuals were tagged in all of our systems with a queue so that officers knew that they were dealing with a quality of life candidate. And then also, if those individuals were going to the care campus for detox, right, they were meeting with the quality of life unit before they got released. So, I mean, it was very intentional, but then also this collaborative approach to working on these high utilizers, right? Because eventually that constant communication, you're going to be able to make some kind of difference and say, hey, how does it work? But then, I mean, we also empowered these two officers to work with the court system, to talk to judges, to talk to prosecutors, to talk to public defenders. And, you know, they've actually negotiated treatment options where these people were given the option to go to treatment and get out of jail early. And, you know, some of these people had life-changing transformations. I mean, but selfishly, we don't have 300 calls for service a year. And you start taking those down and that adds up.
Absolutely. Okay, let me stop right here and revisit the quality of life unit. You've mentioned that several times. What is the quality of life unit?
So that is two officers who are plain clothed, just work with our homeless population, and they're, you know, co-located with our crisis services and our homeless services and our detox facility and the health and human service counselors. The IACP actually helped us start that unit through a grant called the Collective Healing Initiative. And that was kind of where we kind of developed a lot of our proactive programming to where we are now, because we wanted to focus on our most vulnerable and then also our highest utilizers, right? And then kind of work towards, well, how do we prevent this? And then how do we actually operationalize this in the community?
That's amazing. And you utilized grant funding to your benefit in several different ways. So you just mentioned the grant through IACP, but you also utilized, I understand, a Department of Justice COPS grant, correct?
Yes, we've used a lot of COPS grants and are very appreciative to them.
What is the grant that you partnered with Fire Department?
That is the COPS CIT grant, the micro grant.
What is the COPS CIT grant, Stan?
The Crisis Intervention Training Grant. It's about collaborative co-response and crisis solutions.
How did you set that up with your fire department?
We bullied them a little bit. No, I'm joking. But no, we said, hey, you know, we talked about our high utilizers once again, right? And said, what are your numbers? You know, and then they ran the numbers, right? So we're trying to get political and social support for this. And I believe that they were having 1.5 million in unbilled EMS services a year. So, I mean, that's like 30 officers or firefighters right there, right? So we kind of took the business approach to all this, right? And the practical. Because people care about funding, right? And if you're trying to get new programs funded, they cost money, but where's that money coming from? So through that ISP Collective Healing Grant, we knew we wanted street outreach and different programs that are actually, you know, once again, working on our officer fatigue and burnout, right? Because if officers aren't having to respond to those low-level calls, they're not having that fatigue and all that stuff associated to those reoccurring calls that they didn't like and were not obviously best responded to by a police officer. And, you know, Fire jumped on board, you know, always had a great relationship besides the jokes, you know, back and forth. So I actually applied with a fire science degree here. So that was kind of embarrassing.
I can hear it all. So you utilize the grants. 60% of your calls were in response to basically the homelessness crisis and working with those high utilizers, identifying them, getting them the help that they actually need. You mentioned that there were some transformational stories among those high utilizers. Can you tell us about one of them?
Yeah, I can sanitize it out. So like I said, one of those high utilizers had a brother who used up as much resources as he did. And the quality of life unit actually, you know, got him out of jail and into treatment. And I believe he was sober and clean and employed for 12 months before he moved out of the community. And I mean, that was huge because everybody knew his name, right? Every fire, EMS, police officer, social worker in the health field and able to share that, right? And that was part of our success is, you know, officers were really skeptical about us taking two of their numbers and turning them into a homeless outreach unit, right? So, I mean, it was all about not only sharing those internally, but externally. And then, you know, saying, hey, what are the next steps? Well, you know, like I talked about that business perspective. And that was just a part of it. I mean, fast forward now, we're partnered with Journey On, which is a community organization that we helped to set up to respond to low-level calls for service and help us with our co-occurring crisis and substance abuse. They, I believe, now have 10 outreach workers, supervisors, and they're handling, I think they handled 10,000 calls the first year they were in operation. So, I mean, that was kind of from there to now. And I mean, I could talk about this all day, but I don't want to keep my soapbox out because I think a lot of our other recruitment stuff is kind of what paid dividends.
And we're going to get to that. And I promise you, I think that there are people who could listen to you all day because they are grappling with the same issues on their home front. So it sounds like to me, you stopped accepting the status quo. It's no longer, well, it is what it is. We've got 60% homelessness calls and you got creative and then you found the funding and you got that buy-in. I don't mean to oversimplify it, but if there's a will, there's a way, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of it just boiled down to like, you know, the chief's putting in the time explaining stuff with not only the troops, but the community and the community leadership over at council and the mayor's office. It really helped. Our mayor was the prior chief of police. So he really understood the issues and embraced the community policing aspects and, you know, was a big champion of going after and doing these proactive solutions.
Thanks, Dave. So that obviously helps with morale for your existing officers in terms of the calls that they're running. In terms of attracting and keeping, but attracting new candidates and keeping officers who you have in your rank and file, talk to me about the better pay and the time off, because that's not just we're going to get more money. You got real about attacking those particular concerns that officers had raised.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to note, you know, it has to be a command philosophy. We have a saying around here that you have to be able to take care of yourself before you can take care of others. And that's physically, mentally, and financially. If an officer is not in the right frame of mind, we can't expect them to go out and care for our community, because when they have other problems on their plate, they're not going to provide that level of customer service that our citizens need. And I think when we have officers not out there in the right frame of mind, again, whether that's physically, mentally, financially, they're going to make mistakes. And that's when our profession ends up on the front page of the news and we have protests. So we start with that philosophy and we really looked at what we were doing and some of the practices. And since then, we've given our sergeants permission that if an officer is not in the right frame of mind to be out serving our public, they have permission to send them home and paid and let them do what they need to do. And then come back when you're ready and you're in the right frame of mind to serve our community. So I think with that philosophy, we really started looking at what can we offer our employees that coincides with this model that you have to be able to take care of yourself. So we really focus a lot of our incentives on financial wellness, physical wellness, and emotional and mental wellness.
Let's start off with the first one you mentioned, financial wellness and that time off. What did you do there?
We did a study. What other officers, what other departments are making? And we were able to justify this by our call for service volume, being that we are one of the highest call for service departments here, basically in the Midwest region. So we looked at that, looked at what others were making, and we were able to make a pretty good argument that our officers needed to be paid as such. So, you know, back in 2020, we were starting off at $22.82, and since then, we've increased our wages to a little over 32%, and our officers are now starting off at $30.17, and we're committed to staying one of the highest paid agencies in the state of South Dakota.
Excellent. And then the time off. You know, there are those who are like, hey, listen, I don't want overtime. I need to take a minute. I've got to take a knee. What did you do there with the personal time off?
Yeah, that's generational preferences. The generation that we're hiring now is very interested in the time off, the time spent with their family and friends and doing hobbies. And not like when I came to work, you can throw me all the overtime you want, I'm going to eat it up. But times have changed. Time off ranked very, very high in our employee surveys. And so we looked at that. And one of the issues we noticed when we hire new employees, they start off with a zero sick leave balance or zero vacation balance. And what happens if you have that family emergency or you need to take some days off? They don't have that balance there. So we implemented right off the bat, we're going to give you 40 hours of vacation and we're going to give you 3 days of sick leave day one through the door to kind of take off that stress of not being able to take some time off. What we were seeing is if an employee had a family emergency or a medical emergency, really what it was is all the other employees in the department would donate vacation and donate time to them. So we just adjusted that and make sure they have that peace of mind that they do have some time off and some vacation right away. So that was one thing we did for some more time. And another thing we did is we increased the rate of what you accrue vacation. So prior to, you had to be at the Rapid City Police Department or with the city here for 13 years. And once you hit that 13-year mark, you start earning 4 weeks of vacation a year. So what we did was we bumped all that down. So now you max out your vacation accrual at 7 years. And there was 3 steps before you max out. So we bumped all that down. We cut it down. So our employees are earning more vacation a lot sooner.
80 hours of sabbatical leave at year 3?
Yes, we did implement sabbatical leave. If you would have asked me, you know, 5 years ago about sabbatical leave, I probably would have laughed you out of the room. But yeah, we've implemented sabbatical leave. So we know that the first 3 years in law enforcement, you're drinking out of a fire hose. You're going through a lot of training. It's a lot to take in. And really that first 3 years, you need a break. So we're going to give you that break. We're going to give you 80 hours of sabbatical leave. It's not going to come out of your vacation balances. And then we're going to give that to you again every 4 years after that.
That is huge. Previously unheard of. Now I can see where people want to sign up with you. You have 1 quarterly paid wellness day. Talk about that. What is that?
Yeah. So each quarter, an employee can take a wellness day. It's just not a free day off where you can sit at home. We are going to ask that you do a wellness activity. And we've contracted with several local providers. You can go in for, you know, if it's deep float, cryo, massage therapy, red light therapy, several different types of therapies. You can go in there. You can spend an hour doing that therapy. You don't need to take a vacation day. The city's going to pay. We pay for that activity, and then you can have the rest of the day to focus on yourself.
One thing to add to that. So this is not just a day. This is taken off your schedule. So this is one of your normal scheduled shifts. So you replace one of your days you're going to be working with this. And the only requirement is you have a 1 hour meeting with the peer support team and talk about your wellness and health.
And in real world scenarios, in many departments, you have to come in on your off time to do activities like this. Giving them the time during their shift, that seems pretty key to me.
I agree. Again, it helps prevent that burnout. And again, one of those therapy sessions is meant for your physical or mental wellness. And it's been met with a huge success. You know, we were worried about it's a fine balance because at the time when we implemented this, we're struggling with numbers already. But if we don't implement this, we're going to continue to struggle with numbers in the future. So we kind of have to suck it up when people are off on their sabbaticals or off on their wellness days with those low shift numbers and maybe offer those overtime to fill that shift until we get caught up.
I just was about to ask you, like, how can you stand having, you know, because that's a lot of hours added up when you start talking about your full force and people having access to those opportunities. How's it been? You've been using overtime. Are you managing?
We are managing. And again, at the beginning, it might have been a little bit tricky. Our sergeants and our supervisors did a great job balancing the schedule. It had the least amount of impact. But as our hiring increased, and I forgot to mention that, our hiring comparison from 2022 to 2023, we're up 87.5%. So getting these extra bodies in and get these extra individuals trained and get them out on the street, it definitely has lessened that burden. And right now, our sergeants, we just polled our sergeants and interviewed them about wellness days and sabbatical leaves. And our sergeants are all on board and want the program to continue.
That's amazing. And I'm glad to hear that you sort of walked the walk and you managed through the beginning of it. And it seems to me that things have settled a bit. That's great news for those who might be thinking about implementing some of these initiatives. Not to downplay them, but you also have a 250 student loan repayment monthly and no copay for therapy and counseling.
Correct. Yes. Again, important to us where we're talking about that physical and mental wellness. So we have some great benefits already through the city. Right now, therapy is 100% covered except for the copay part. And we have a $30 copay. So we're going to take care of that $30 copay. If people need to talk to someone, we encourage that. We're trying to erase that stigma. And it's also been a great benefit. And it's been taken advantage of probably more than we would have guessed initially.
I just wanted to put a cautionary tale out there when people are implementing all these things, right? And a lot of the effort and intentions goes towards attracting new candidates, right? But you got to take care of the people that have stuck with you and are still here, right? So, I mean, if you don't retroactively give people sabbaticals that have put in the time and effort and only focus on the new hires, you're definitely going to have unintended consequences with these types of programming.
And I'll piggyback on that. That was one thing we contemplated was a hiring bonus. But I was really dead set not to have a hiring bonus. I think we have to reward those employees that have been here, those employees that stuck it out. And so instead of a hiring bonus, we give employees a $3,000 recruitment bonus if they refer an individual that gets hired on as the police department.
That's creative. And I have not heard of that before. Thank you for bringing that to light. So you have all these amazing tools now at your disposal to help the officers who you currently have employed and to attract new candidates. Let's talk about that hiring process. You just gave us a figure between 2022 and 2023 in terms of your hiring. How has that landscape shifted for you?
Well, thanks to the COPS grant, we were able to hire a recruiter, a professional recruiter who has done an absolutely amazing job with our social media. We've partnered with a marketer here in town and really have hit the internet. And she has done an absolute fabulous job in getting new bodies in here. And we've turned over a lot of our hiring process to her, which has freed up supervisors and other officers from doing the hiring in the past. So out traditional, going to job fairs at colleges, doing all that, advertisement. But again, I think a lot of this circles back. If I look at a lot of the classes we've hired here this year, our staff is our best recruiter. Our employees getting word out, our employees talking positive about the Rapid City Police Department, telling their friends, telling their family, they are our best recruiters. And we've paid a lot of $3,000 recruitment bonuses this year.
That's awesome. You know, you got me thinking here. South Dakota might be cold, but I can handle it. In terms of the type of candidate you're going after, has that changed as well? And if so, how are you reaching them?
Yeah, I can talk to this a little bit. So I wanted to kind of circle back to like the recruitment process itself, right? So back in the day, we were getting 150 applications, right? And that dramatically shifted to about 30, where you were actually telling people you're on a list for the next year, we might call you, right? Now we're in a super hyperactive and competitive market. You know, and one of the big things too is we were having a training sergeant doing all our recruitment and balancing our training load. So, I mean, you were losing that institutional knowledge every 3 years when that person got promoted or retired or moved on, right? So that was kind of the focus why we turned to the COPS grant to say, hey, look, we are looking at, you know, not a lot of agencies that have a full-time recruiter at our size, which is, I think we're at like 140 sworn right now. We said, hey, we really need to professionalize this. And also we're looking at doing some different things for our recruiting campaign, specifically looking after, going after our military veterans. I believe we're over 60% veteran staff, something high like that. And a lot of those candidates are pretty resilient from their time in the military, have more life experience and more, you know, they're a little bit older than your traditional college candidate. Our design was to go after that military skill bridge program. And if departments aren't using that, they should. Basically, in a nutshell, real quick, is that program, you find somebody that's transitioning out of the military. It allows that military member to come be duty assigned while they're still in the military to you as an unpaid intern. So the military pays their pay and benefits for 6 months while you're putting them through the academy in that PTO phase. And that's usually when people say, hey, I want to be a cop, or I don't, right? And so as a department, you know, we were spending like 50 grand to train people. And if you can get that military skill bridge program active, the military still pays them their pay and benefits, and you're just training them to be an officer. And when they get out of that military time and service, you just offer them a job and then they come onto your payroll at that time. I mean, that's a really cool program.
That is so cool. You are training officers on someone else's dime, getting them exposed during that time when you can lose officers. So you're getting them exposed. They can make that decision as to whether or not this is the career for them. And then by the time they come out, not only have they been trained on someone else's dime, but they've also had that time to digest what it really means to be a police officer. And they come in confident if they say, yes, this is what I want to do, or they walk away from it. And that sounds amazing.
Yeah. And like I said, we wouldn't have been able to run with the program the way we have in our recruitment program if we didn't propose an innovative idea to COPS to say, hey, look, we want to try a different recruiting strategy. We're a mid-level, small agency in rural South Dakota. We want to try and, you know, target this surrounding six states, look at the military installations and also these technical schools, and really intentionally focusing on that, right? Especially those schools that have academies. So we're getting reciprocity eligible officers that we're not having to put through the academy, right? And that's 3 months of training where you're going to house and pay for somebody. So, I mean, there was a lot of really intentional design behind our outreach and recruitment and, you know, focusing on our target areas, these vocational and colleges with law enforcement programs that specifically do reciprocity eligible hiring.
I was just going to say, in addition, you know, I think all departments would appreciate the diversity of their department to mimic the diversity of their community. So we've launched an Empower Her campaign to attract female candidates. And we've also been to and visited a few times some United Tribal Technical Colleges, again, to promote diversity within the police department.
It's been proven that if your department reflects the community, you're going to have a more effective policing that community. So that's phenomenal. You know, virtually every single law enforcement agency in America is trying to recruit officers. And so it's extremely competitive. I mean, when you've got South Dakota and then you've got police departments in Florida who they're like, hey, come enjoy the sun and the beach. Has it been that focus on going after these military members? Like, what has set Rapid City apart from the rest?
Yeah, I think if you've ever been to Rapid City, we're at the heart of the Black Hills here in South Dakota. It's a beautiful area. A lot of the people and candidates we attract are into the outdoors and hiking and hunting and fishing. And we've been getting a lot of applicants from the East Coast and the West Coast that come to the area and fall in love. We are 16 miles from Mount Rushmore, so it's a large tourist area during the summer. And a lot of our applicants that will come back and say, I was here for the summer. I fell in love with the area. I want to come back. Obviously, they weren't here during the winter, but the winters aren't too bad. So
I've been there during the winter.
You get used to it.
I think I cried one day. I was so cold.
So, yeah, I think we're just kind of unique in that area. A lot of South Dakota, when you get across the river or you start heading east of us, it's real flat and it's farmland, but that's not the area where we are at. And again, it's a great area. 5.5 hours from Denver. Minneapolis isn't too bad for a drive. So we're rural, but we're in a great location for that kind of lifestyle, that we're a little bit more laid back lifestyle with hunting and fishing and tourism being our main attractions.
I'm packing my bags now and my snowsuit, just so you know. You know, before we let you go, before we close, looking back on, I mean, there's just so much that you've done, right? It's almost hard to digest, but looking back on trials and tribulations and the journey, if there was anything that you would look back on and say, hey, you know what, I could save people a lot of pain now that I know what I know. Are there any lessons learned that you think are valuable for our listeners?
You know, I think one of the biggest lessons learned is this package we have forward is not what we initially designed or what we had presented. So to save yourself a lot of time, if you're looking at implementing this stuff, and I hear a lot of, well, we can't do that because of the government red tape. My biggest set of advice would be to get with your city leadership, include city council president and that finance director, the HR director, and the city attorney in on those initial meetings, and you can really figure out what you can do and what you can't do. And a lot of the stuff when we're talking about increasing the time off of sabbatical leave, that really doesn't cost anything out of our budget. Those were easy wins for us. So get that city leadership on board, do the research, define the need and the cost savings. Because really, if I can just hit that real quick. So right now, if I did replace 12 officers this year, if I'm just talking salary alone and benefits, not training, it's going to cost me somewhere between $652,000 to $870,000 just to pay those officers their salary until they can work independently. And that's not including all the costs, the training and everything like that. So we're projected this year. Another benefit we offered is a longevity bonus. So after a longevity bonus payout, the first 9 months of this wellness package is going to cost approximately $493,000. But if I had to replace those 12 officers, I'm still saving nearly $300,000. And you can't even put a price tag on the productivity and the efficiency and the institutional knowledge that walks out that door, right? We know that with experienced officers, we generate less use of force, right? We generate less complaints. There's less complaints to investigate. There's less use of force, which equals less lawsuits. So keeping these experienced individuals inside of our department and serving our community, that $300,000 is nothing compared to everything else that those experienced people bring.
Dave, any lessons learned for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything boils down to, in government, right, your political and social capital, right? I mean, every program we do, we have it lined out, you know, like, here's our expectations, here's what we think's going to happen. But I mean, also, like, from the high utilizers to the different, like, longevity bonuses and that, have the numbers, have them ready, involve that leadership, like the chief said, you know, I wish we had Chief Hedrick on here to talk about how many hours and hours and hours he politicked all of this, you know, really the champion behind the scenes and meeting with the council members and the mayor and the finance director and HR to get all this pushed through. But everything we did, I mean, Scott and I probably wrote 100 different memos and backed it all up with research. And I mean, just come correct and have your stuff ready and show the real tangible value in these programs. Because, you know, like he was talking about, if you would have brought up sabbatical leave 10 years ago, you know, everybody would have just snickered at it. But I mean, we were working with the cops office and IACP and we're looking into sabbatical. And the only place I could find it was this small, I think, 10 person agency in Wisconsin. I called the chief, had a real great conversation with him and said, hey, can I get your policy and any documents you got? And said, you know, what's really stopping us from doing this? We had that conversation. Sure, shifts are going to be low, but you know, it's just making that investment. Now that we're all through the first phase of sabbatical, it's super easy because it's just for those first 3 years and then it's cumulative every 4 years after that throughout their career.
And to piggyback on that, I think you might find this a little eye-opening also, but doing that research and visiting with city leadership and visiting with city council prior to, when this went to council, when this whole wellness package went to council for approval, it went on consent with no questions. We were prepared to give a presentation on why this is needed. No questions. It passed on consent. And it was amazing. Not only that, we probably had 30 officers that attended that city council meeting. So those officers, like with their presence, made it known that this is important to them. And what I'm not talking about here is also is how our morale has increased, which I think you can see through the 55% decrease in attrition.
And that's the most important thing, right? It's how are your officers feeling? I mean, they are going out there and putting their lives on the line. And I know we say that all the time, but facts are facts. And that takes a lot out of a human being day in, day out, seeing the things that they see, the pressure that they're up against day in, day out, and to be able to actually do something about that, put the recruitment and retention aside, just to be able to do that for your officers is massive. You know, two of the things that struck me most about your journey, A, it's just changing your thinking, it sounds like. You know, it's that laughing off sabbatical leave and accepting it as a real possible option for you. It's getting creative and breaking the mold and doing things that you've never done before that might feel uncomfortable at first, seems like to me. And you guys can say, no, that's not what it was. But it just sounds like, you know, a lot of it is just the mental game. You got to just break free of past and get creative about the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a different world than 10 years ago. I mean, trying to get overtime shifts staffed these day and ages is, you know, really hard because this generation of officers wants to use their time off.
Yeah, they do. And I think the pandemic too had a lot to play with that, right? We all know time is limited, but wow, that really, I think, shook a lot of people and it re-engaged folks on what's really important in life, et cetera. So I'm not surprised to see that generational change of people wanting that time off versus money in their wallet. The other thing that you've talked about so much throughout this time with us is the research and stats. And correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't sound like you can downplay that at all. I mean, you had the information to back up what you wanted to do. And just like you described that one council meeting, you didn't even have to make the presentation. There was no real arguments there. You had the data, you backed it up, and change happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was definitely key. And I think it's important for us in law enforcement to remember is we're competing with private organizations and private businesses. So this is the stuff that these private organizations and businesses are doing, and this is what we're competing with. So we have to adapt to the times. We have to adapt to the new generational preferences and expectations. And again, that was one of the common trend that we noticed in 2020 throughout 2022 was people were completely leaving the profession of law enforcement and going into these private organizations that do offer these benefits. So if we're going to remain competitive and we're going to attract quality employees, these are the type of efforts that we're going to have to make. And we're going to have to stay proactive moving forward. We can't call this good enough. We got to continue to constantly evaluate and be prepared to adjust and remain competitive.
Yeah, I think one thing too that we kind of didn't really go in depth about was our peer support team and the design of that.
Tell us more.
Our peer support team really took off in 20, I believe it was like 2017, 2018, where we took an intentional look at how we're doing our critical incident stress debriefings and our overall just wellness and, you know, concern in our patrol and with our officers because, you know, they see a lot of stuff, that cumulative trauma, that compassion fatigue. And like the assistant chief was talking about, if you're not in that right mindset, you can't go out there and really help out anybody else. So we took a look at our peer support team. Part of that collective healing initiative was officer wellness and resiliency. And we took the initial steps, got a 12-person peer support team trained. The assistant chief was on that team. We had commanders, we had some line level supervisors, but most importantly, we had the informal peer leaders, right? Because they set the culture and really know the pulse of the agency. But I mean, that intentional design from every element of the department and civilian staff, taking care of our people and pulling people aside, having those conversations like, hey, you know, but then working with them now, just having supervisors with the ability to say, hey, maybe you should take a wellness day, right? But I mean, that's different thinking. And with the COPS office, we applied for a Law Enforcement Mental Health and Wellness Act grant and got a full-time wellness coordinator to kind of support that peer support team, right? Because as we know, our officers that have these ancillary duties usually have four or five, right? So we wanted to make it as easy as possible on them, but also bring some different aspects to that. Our peer support team's thriving. They're involved in a lot of our wellness activities, like our quarterly wellness days, talking, you know, doing those critical stress debriefs. So, I mean, I think it's really pivotal that you have a dedicated team, but then also the culture that supports it, right? Because if you're not supported or taking action when, you know, there are people having issues, another thing that, you know, like we didn't talk about is everybody knows when there's a really big issue, right? Or something happened. Legally, you didn't say anything, but everybody knows if an officer's struggling. And, you know, we've really taken really good care of our officers. We've had some go to treatment, quite frankly, and other things, and they sat supported or they were having issues and pulled them out of their role and supported, right? But then that also talked about like going in and working with the families, right? Because it's easy enough for an officer to skate by at work. But if you let the spouse know that you're going to take care of their spouse if something's going on and their livelihood's not going to be affected because they're out of a job. But I mean, that's a lot of unforeseen aspects of making a safe environment that takes care of people.
And the fact that you guys have seen results so quickly, right? I heard you, Chief, when you said, you know, we're not going to sit idle. We're not taking any of this for granted. We're going to keep thinking proactively. But the fact that what you've done so far, which is a lot, but the fact that you're seeing results so quickly, the fact that you changed culture so quickly, I mean, changing culture is like turning a freight liner around or in a canal, and that you're seeing that to me is just real proof that this is positive change.
Yeah, I agree. That culture change has to, you know, all culture changes need to start from the top down. And you can't forget those police training officers. They play such a pivotal role in that culture change. The days of training someone and going to a very critical incident or scene and looking over and telling the new hire officer, like, suck it up, we're going to get 10 more of those this month. Those days are over, you know, stopping and acknowledging that that happened. That sucked. We shouldn't have had to witness that, but we got some support for it. So getting your police training officers on board and making sure those sergeants and everyone else in that leadership is on board with this new philosophy that, you know, the Rapid City Police Department, and I think all law enforcement, we go through extraordinary steps to make sure we're hiring the right candidate and they're a good fit and they're not broken. But this profession does a great job of breaking them. So we need to make sure we put them back together again.
And I mean, that's something too. I mean, like I said, everybody knows when something's going on. And if they see command staff really bending over backwards, investing the time and effort, and even if that person does leave on their own volition, it's pretty public. You know, actions speak a lot louder than words in those aspects.
And you guys are certainly stepping up. You're not just talking about it, you're doing it. And they see that, and that's clear. So just like you called that one 10-person police department and asked them about sabbatical leave, I know that we have people who are listening who would love to make contact with you. Why reinvent the wheel if someone's already done it, right? And if you guys are doing it and it's working, why not spread the love? So how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to talk more about any one of the several programs that you've launched?
Yeah, anyone interested, feel free to email me at scott.sitz@rcgov.org. scott.sitz@rcgov.org.
And if you've got some of the funding aspects or a grant person, you can reach out to me, dave.kinzer@rcgov.org. That's Dave, D-A-V-E dot Kinzer, K-I-N-S-E-R at rcgov.org. Also, if you don't get these emails right, just call the PD and ask for me or Scott.
605-394-4133.
Well, I have a feeling your emails and your phones are going to be blowing up.
Hey, we welcome it.
I'm going to take a sabbatical.
I'm about to take a sabbatical. I cannot thank you guys so much for spending time with us and for being so open and honest and sharing this wealth of knowledge with our listeners here on the beat. I wish you the best of luck. I'm not sure how much you're going to need because it sounds like you are rolling along there. Thank you so much for joining us here on the beat.
Hey, it was great visiting with you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. All right. You guys take care. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here on The Beat.
The Beat is brought to you by the United States Department of Justice's COPS Office. The COPS Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems. If you have comments or suggestions, please email our response center at askcopsrc@usdoj.gov or check out our social media on Facebook, www.facebook.com/DOJCops, on YouTube, www.youtube.com/C/DOJCopsOffice, or on Twitter @CopsOffice. Our website is www.cops.usdoj.gov. The opinions contained herein are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. References to specific agencies, companies, products, or services should not be considered an endorsement by the authors or the U.S. Department of Justice. Rather, the references are illustrations to supplement discussion of the issues.